You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Your table is now ready. Your servers will be Nate Geary and Bruce Nolan. Our specials today are cold, hard facts and fresh, hot takes. Can I get you started with... I'm sorry, just one moment. Can I get a little energy in here?
Giving it up to you live on the Buffalo Rumblings Vidcast Network. I'm Bruce Nolan, that's Nate Geary, and this is Food for Thought, a show that combines two of your three favorite F words. I don't know what you're thinking. It's clearly food and football. The third one for most people is obviously Frankfurters, because we're all big hot dog people. So get your head out of the gutter. I don't know what you were thinking.
You know, I'm well. I'm glad you brought up hot dogs. I was watching Bar Rescue today, and they had the bar that they were rescuing cooking hot dogs in beer.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. I'm going to tell you why I don't like it.
As long as you don't boil it, I think it wouldn't really matter.
That's what they were doing. They were boiling it in beer.
But you're not supposed to boil hot dogs.
Correct, Bruce.
Yeah. See, simmering it in beer, I'm good with.
No, they were cooking it right in the
boiling,
beer juice.
Boiling it doesn't feel appropriate. I don't think that feels appropriate at all. Mm-mm. Well, we're going to turn up the heat tonight. Nate is living proof that internet bullying works. Nate, you and I didn't get a chance to talk between the time we recorded Food for Thought last Friday and the time when you announced to the Twitterverse that you were going to, you were going to relent and take a sip of eggnog. What happened? How did you end up with this turn of, this complete 180 in mindset, this turn of mindset here that is about eggnog? What happened? Did Big Nog get to you, Nate?
So you know who it actually was? It was Matt Warren. You don't want to let down Matt Warren. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of like letting down your dad. He wasn't mad at me. He was just disappointed. And the second he said just how disappointed he was, I went to Wegmans, picked up a Upstate Farms eggnog. And I'm going to drink it. I just had a big pasta dinner.
With eggnog.
Yeah, let's see how this bad boy
goes. Absolutely amazing. I hope you don't have any real plans tomorrow.
No, I don't.
Good.
I don't.
Good. I'm glad. You know, it's funny. We were talking about eggnog last week, and then you get off and, Matt Warren decides to say that he's disappointed in you. But that had an effect on you. But yet me being disappointed in you didn't matter at all. The listeners being mad at you, not even relevant. But when Matt was disappointed in you, then it was, well, we got to do something now.
Right.
See, right. I always figured that I was like the wise older father of Bill's Mafia. But am I actually just a kooky uncle, Nate, who you just
ignore? You are definitely Uncle Bruce for sure. Oh. There's a special place for Uncle Bruce. He's needed in the ecosystem and in the eco chamber, if you know what I mean.
Hmm. Okay. So do you want to go ahead and take your sip of eggnog right off the bat?
Yeah. Let's get this over with.
While it's cold.
Let's get this over with.
Right? That makes sense. For those of you who are listening, Nate Geary just shook up his eggnog
This is thick.
Cook took the cap gross. Off and is staring at it like he's very nervous. He's very, very nervous. Nate, do you want to do the honors?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Here we go. Here comes the first sip of eggnog.
I just wanted to know, I don't drink milk normally. I'm not a milk drinker, so this is making it even a little bit more.
So milk punch is just a step too far.
Oh, God.
He had the drink. He's tasting it on his lips. He's going back for a second drink. Narrating Nate drinking something is really testing my play-by-play skills. I got to be honest. Somewhere there's someone listening to this pod going, really? I should get yakety sacks or something playing in the background while we do this. He's putting the lid back on. I'm ready for the review of eggnog, Nate.
Well, I had to get three sips. My mouth is making a weird... My mouth's reacting. I think my fight or flight senses is kicking in, are kicking in, and I think my body's starting to reject it. So, hold on.
So that's strong.
I need to. That's much
did you
better.
Just chase it with water?
Yeah.
But didn't you bring something special to chase it?
Yeah, but this is to make it everything be better. This old fashioned.
So Nate was told that alcohol was the key for eggnog. So he decided to get his alcohol on the side, and he has an old fashioned that he's drinking to chase the eggnog. All right, let's see how well your descriptive skills are. Nate, tell me about your eggnog.
It just was so, I don't know. It wasn't good. It was more of an experience than I thought it was going to be. It's like a very textural experience. It's thick. It's runny. It tastes like I'm going to have heartburn later from it.
Okay. Okay. Oh, there it is already. We have our first, I'm kind of shocked that we've been through this many episodes of Food for Thought and we have yet to get our first belched into the microphone until right now.
I don't know. I'm not a fan. Yeah. Okay. Think with two C's, Kristen. Definitely think with two C's.
We did it. We did the thing. Nate had the eggnog. And moving forward,
I didn't like it.
Now that we've had eggnog, now we can talk about the more salient of classified foods, and that is Thanksgiving food. Now, I have a take that anyone who has followed me on social media will know. But in the event that you have not had an opportunity to hear this particular take, my take is this. Thanksgiving food, specifically Thanksgiving sides, are overwhelmingly garbage. Overwhelmingly garbage.
That's such a broad, fake outrage take, Bruce.
I'll give you some great examples. Green bean casserole is lousy.
You've had some bad green bean casserole, I guess. I just had some terrific one the other day.
Lousy. Absolutely. Cranberry sauce can absolutely go the way of the dinosaurs. Complete extinction for cranberry sauce. Stuffing? Nah, pass on stuffing. Hard pass on stuffing.
Bruce, what is Miss Nolan making for Thanksgiving that these are your takes right now?
So last year for Thanksgiving, we made turkey and potatoes.
Yeah.
And mac and cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we did a corn casserole.
Okay. Those are good. I'm into that.
That was basically it.
So green bean casserole is one of my favorites if it's crispy enough on the top. So I like to even throw it in with the crispy onions on top because that's really important. But I think you probably have the runny green bean casserole, which nobody wants the runny, too much cream of onion soup or cream of mushroom. Oh,
still has to have the after effects.
This might have been a bad idea for the podcast. Just moving forward, I'm feeling unwell from that. I might have to I have to walk away for a couple of minutes here, regain my sea legs. But I'm going to tell you, obviously, potatoes are like kind of the mainstay. They need to be there on the plate at the table. No questions asked sort of thing, right? But I also think another really important mainstay, and then the question comes, maybe the most important question of Thanksgiving, but I'll ask you after I tell you what the next mainstay is I do think that a good, like good Italian, mild Italian sausage stuffing can really set the tone. Like that will be the thing that I tend to like go back and get more of. And then for me, I think I eat cranberry sauce the right way, Bruce, which is cranberry sauce isn't really meant to be its own side, which I think often the reason that a person like you says, I don't like cranberry sauce. But if you're smart, in one bite, you got a little turkey, little cranberry, little stuffing in one bite. Now you're doing Thanksgiving, I think, a little bit more appropriately. But here's the real take that I just want to throw out there. Turkey is not that good. And I think if I had it my way, I would have ham. And I actually tried to pressure my girlfriend into doing ham for our Thanksgiving. And she would not budge away from going with fresh young turkey. It sounds so wrong. That's how they're described, as young turkeys. You people are psychopaths. Like, I eat turkey, but unless it's deep fried or smoked, like roasted turkey kind of is lame.
Oh man, that is a thing. I like turkey. My wife does a slow cooker turkey every year. Ooh. Where, you know, all of the dryness that you normally associate with the inside of a turkey is just non-existent when you slow cook it in its own juices. And it has a chance to really, really, really soften up. And I'm a big fan of the slow cooker turkey breast that she does as a fair amount. I say a fair amount of the time she does that. But yeah, Thanksgiving food, I'm just not all that into it, to be honest. And every year it creates a problem when I want to go somewhere else for Thanksgiving. Now, this is important. I never want to go somewhere else for Thanksgiving. This is very important. At no point do I want to go to your house for Thanksgiving. Okay. Never. So stop inviting me. I don't want to come to your house for Thanksgiving. I don't want to eat your cranberry sauce and your green bean casserole. I don't want to feel obligated to eat all the crap that I don't like at your house. Let me stay home.
So wrong of you.
Stop inviting me places. Right. And I won't have to worry about the food stuff because I get to eat what I want to eat instead of what you like to eat. So for me, I don't want to go anywhere. But one of the reasons I don't want to go anywhere is because everywhere I go is filled with places and foods that I don't like. So I'm not interested. It's a good, strong pass for me. I want to stay home with my wife and my dogs, and they can get some leftover turkey, and it'll be great. It'll be amazing.
Can I tell you an underrated, it's not an underrated side. I guess it's just a side that I think gets over. No, it's not the word. It's taken for granted in sometimes how difficult it can be to perfect, but mashed potatoes. I have had some bad mashed potatoes, and that is like, and not just like, you know, the boxed flaked mashed potatoes. Those are always bad, but like I've had people that have really, you know, boiled down their potatoes, peeled them, spent the time, did all the whole night. And it's like you were, you know, like putting in spackle into your mouth. Everyone makes the critical mistake in my eyes, Bruce, is they don't use sour cream. And that's a big no-no for me. If you're making mashed potatoes, it better be filled with sour cream, lots and lots of butter, and of course, lots of salt. But like, I think people often miss the boat on the sour cream.
Have you tried using cream cheese?
No, that seems too much for me.
It's fantastic. It's like, absolutely fantastic.
Are you talking about like the whipped cream cheese or just like normal Philadelphia?
Yeah, whipped cream cheese with your mashed potatoes is amazing. We use it a lot of times in place of sour cream, and it's fantastic. Big fan.
I like the bite that sour cream can give you a little bit in there, and it just kind of smooths it out. But I also am, excuse me, I'm also a big proponent of leaving some skin on and then doing kind of like the thicker mashed potatoes where you've got some chunks of potato in there. I'm a big proponent of leaving not all the skin, but some skin on, I think is important.
Before we move on real quick, while we're on the topic, sweet potato casserole is an abomination. So
You there couldn't be more wrong about that.
Moving along.
You anyway, could not be more wrong about that.
If Bills Jets,
I'm upset about that,
was a meal, a good meal, a bad meal, whatever kind of meal you want to describe it. If Bills Jets was a meal, Nate, what kind of meal would it be?
It would be pheasant. And the reason it would be pheasant is long, long ago, pheasant was a common man's food. You were sort of disappointed when pheasant came across the plate. Now it's more of a distinguished gentleman type of food. It's a special occasion. It's a rare fowl. So you get that sort of when you've earned it, you know, you've been to the depths and, you know, you were once for the simple common folk. And now you are for the rich folk. That is pheasant because the Bills were at a very low place. They were common man. They were, but of normal human beings. And then this last week against the New York Jets team, they finally rose to the occasion. They became more distinguished. They became more polished of a team. So for me, pheasant.
Pheasant. Okay. Now I was not expecting that one, but I'm definitely glad that I got the explanation, because otherwise if you would have just said pheasant period and then dead air, I would have been like, first off, thank you for your immense radio talent, Nate, and not elaborating at all.
And saying absolutely nothing.
You went Belichick on me. You went full Belichick on me. Never go full Belichick on me, unless I ask you about a long snapper, in which case you can go Belichick because he'll go off. Or we're playing Cincinnati next week. We're on to Cincinnati. But for me, if Bills Jets was a meal, it would be a tall glass of water. That's it. And I'll tell you why. Couple things. Number one, people use tall glasses of water as being palate cleansers. If you've had something that has left a lingering taste in your mouth and you want to cleanse your palate, you will drink water.
Like this terrible eggnog.
The second thing is, water is a foundational function of human life. You need water to survive. You need it to continue to sustain yourself. And the third thing is, it refreshes you. And that is what the win did for me. It refreshed me. It cleansed the palate after a really bad game.
It got you back to zero.
Jaguars, right? And games like that are a necessity. Games like that are a requirement. You need to have a couple games that aren't cardio-inducing, that aren't stressful. You need a comfortable win on occasion to get your bearings back. And so for me, if Bills Jets was a meal, it's just a single tall glass of water. That's it.
It's a bad. Probably your worst one, Bruce. You can't. It's a meal. If we asked you for your favorite drink, we would have to change the name of our podcast, Bruce. Come on.
Sometimes people are poor and all they can afford is water, Nate.
Next time, Bruce, come more prepared. It's like you're like the kid.
That was really good.
You're like the kid that forgot to do his assignment and then came in late in the class and made up some bullshit right on demand. I was almost a little offended at your answer, to be honest. And then you kept going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Of the two of us, what you just described, it's totally me, not you in this relationship at all. Yes. Wow. Yes. I'm the one who's shooting from the hip, right?
That's a good
point. So we've got a couple of seconds before we bring on our guest. Schematically, Bills, yeah. Colts, tell me, what are you looking for, Nate? What do you got your eye on?
You know what I've got my eye on, Bruce.
It's
the offensive line. Just as you start to feel good about the direction, getting the continuity back, you're thinking about getting John Feliciano back, and then COVID. And you know, you're already dealing with, I think, another really important position in this game, start with Tulele. Probably not playing Sunday because he still remains on the COVID list against what I believe is the best running back pound for pound in the NFL right now. So you really can't overstate the importance of line play. And I'm probably just going to, in a de facto sort of way, Bruce, give this matchup on the offense and defensive line at the point of attack at the line of scrimmage. I'm probably going to give the advantage to the Colts. And if they win the line of scrimmage, it's going to have to come down to the arm of Josh Allen and can he get out, and can Brian Daboll manufacture some boot action, get him out of the pocket, move the pocket so that Josh can gain a couple extra seconds to sort of spread the ball around. So I think for me, it's that is probably right now one of the top one of the bottom two or three pass defenses in the league in Indianapolis, but the Bills faced the worst pass defense in all the football 2 weeks ago and put a six spot on them. So anything is possible when the if Josh Allen or any quarterback can't get time.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. I think it's very interesting because I think that when you look at the Colts secondary, they feel about Andrew Sendejo not only the same way that every team who's ever had Andrew Sendejo has felt about him, but also the way that the Bills fans feel about Bobby Hart. That's the way it works.
Is it that bad?
Yes. Browns fans felt the same way about Andrew Sendejo. In fact, everyone who's ever had Andrew Sendejo on their team has been like, why is he still starting?
Even his parents, they even piss and moan when he has to come home for Christmas and for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, the way the Bills fans felt about AJ Klein for the first couple of weeks when he started in the middle of last year, and they said, literally, you can't possibly do any worse. And I was like, okay, first off, anyone who's listened to George Carlin will tell you, you can absolutely
always do worse. You can always
but
do
also,
worse.
But also, that's how Colts fans feel about Andrew Sendejo. But it's not going to matter if you can't get him in coverage.
Yeah,
it's not going to matter if you can't throw the ball down the field. And so for me, the question is, what do you do with the interior defensive line of the Indianapolis Colts? What do you do with it? Because you're going to have some scenarios where, like you said, you're going to have to move the pocket. You're going to have to run away from it because you're going to have to accept. Yeah. You're going to have to accept some flaws there. You're going to have to accept the fact that you're not going to hold up on the inside. It's just not going to happen. It's not like you can scheme your way into, I wonder if we see a lot of preemptive acceptance when it comes to using running backs in up gun in front of the quarterback, just saying, listen, we know there's going to be a hole here. We're just going to go ahead and pre-pass.
12 personnel, right? Bruce. I wouldn't be surprised if you see more Tommy Sweeney and Dawson Knox on the field. I wouldn't be surprised if you see more of Reggie Gilliam. And that's not exactly the ideal game plan against the secondary that you want to exploit when you have to send out one or two less bodies out in routes. That's not exactly the ideal situation. So there's a good chance you end up seeing, Bruce, a lot of delayed routes, guys staying in and then bailing out. Luckily, this Colts team isn't the necessarily as aggressive as a team like the Dolphins, or if you even go back to like Kansas City or Baltimore, where they're blitzing a lot and you see a lot of that zero blitz. The secondary right now, and we'll talk to Zach Hicks of SI here in just a second and get the lowdown here, but the secondary is a weak point for them, where they're not. Matt Eberflus is a fantastic defensive coordinator, and he's covered them up about as good as he can. But the secondary is somewhere they really need to take advantage of. But it starts up front, and Josh Allen doesn't have the time, and he can't be upright. It's hard to take advantage, like you said, Bruce.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, with the hopes that the Buffalo Bills can take advantage, but with the concerns that they might not, we are bringing in our guest, Mr. Zach Hicks, from SI.com. Mr. Zach Hicks, thank you so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Bills Colts week. I wish we could have done this last year during the playoff game. Were you guys having this show back then?
No, this is the new show. This is well, not that new, Bruce. How long?
It's the new hotness.
It is the new hotness. It's the new hotness. Yeah.
Zach, thanks so much for being here, man. Right off the bat, I want to ask you something. Thanksgiving food. What, you got a take on Thanksgiving food here? Do you have any hot takes around Thanksgiving food? Because I love it with you. I'm feeling the heat a little bit, and I need somebody to take it off me. So could you tell me something along the lines of, you know, Thanksgiving's a horrible holiday and everyone hates it or something like that? Could you give me some sort of take to take a little of the heat off me?
No, I mean, like I will say, I've worked in retail for 6 years now. So Thanksgiving, I've always hated because Black yep. Friday is actually Thanksgiving night. So Thanksgiving, I hated for that reason. But like, as a kid growing up, and like whenever I've been away from retail, Thanksgiving's always been my favorite holiday. I absolutely love it. I'm a big just turkey and gravy guy, and then, you know, stuffing, and I just love so much of the food on Thanksgiving. So. And then you get to watch football, and growing up, I was a Washington fan. So I got to watch them get beat down every single Thanksgiving. So it was great. I love Thanksgiving. I love everything about it. When it comes to like food wise, I don't really have too many hot takes. I just get all the turkey I can, basically, and then throw all the gravy I can on top of it, and, you know, just have fun with it.
Yeah. That's the important part about gravy. And that's why, like, when I'm at a particular place, or I'm at a new spot for Thanksgiving, and I see somebody pull out the canned gravy, I just there's such a level of disappointment that sort of rushes over me. Like, when somebody pulls that out, think about the other shortcuts that have been taken in that dinner.
I always love whenever you get like the ladle and like the
congeals.
For some reason, that gravy tastes amazing, and it could be out of a can. I have no clue, but just have it in there, it's going to taste great. Like, I just know it. I'm super confident.
Bruce, are you and Miss Nolan, you guys a homemade turkey rendering gravy makers?
Oh, absolutely. Or do you guys got to use the drippings, baby.
Okay, good.
I mentioned we use the slow cooker turkey breast. And so at the bottom of that slow cooker, you get a lot of goodness that you can mix up to make gravy. And it's pretty solid. I'm not going to lie. I'll tell you what's not gravy. What's not gravy is the Bills' interior offensive line right now.
No,
that's not gravy.
You know what else is not gravy?
Transition.
Hold on, before you even go there, Zach, are you an eggnog fan?
No.
Okay, so I tried it for the first time tonight before you. And it's sort of like milk gravy, is how I would describe it. So if you've never had it or you don't ever want to try it, I'm here to tell you, there's no reason to ever try it. So
yeah,
you're welcome. You know,
I tried it once when I was younger. Since then, never again. Like,
nah,
I'm good. Yep.
I in the comment section, there was multiple remarks about the type that I got here. This Upstate Farm, apparently it's very basic B. It's just for idiots who need to put a whole bunch of rum in it. And I didn't put rum in it, so I guess that's probably my bad. But like, if you Wikipedia what eggnog is, how it's described is milk punch. So first and foremost, that is just repulsive. But secondly, since we're in the neighborhood of talking gravy, this has a very similar consistency of like what I want my gravy to be like. So that's definitely part of the problem with it. But Bruce, sorry for going down a weird path with this eggnog, but it's the eggnog theme today. So
I had an absolutely brilliant transition, and you just stepped all over it. I had the gravy to the gravy. We're keeping with the whole food for thought thing.
Sure.
You just had to get your eggnog in.
Says the guy who put a tall glass of water as what his meal.
Brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant.
Terrible. Go ahead, Bruce. 100% go ahead. Brilliant. Take control.
So gravy. Bills offensive line, not gravy right now. Spencer Brown on COVID list requires a lot of movement. The Bills signed Bobby Hart today. I know for a fact. I could see you backstage nodding in agreement to my Andrew Sendejo comparison. I know you know. Anyone who's a Browns fan knows. Vikings fans know. They know about Sendejo. They Sendejo know for sure. But DeForest Buckner has been every bit what he was advertised to be when the Colts traded a first-round pick for him. And the 49ers thought, well, we'll just really easily draft a defensive tackle and replace him. And it hasn't quite gone that way, because DeForest Buckner has been every bit as good as he was advertised to be. What does having Kwity Paye healthy and starting to turn the corner and starting to see the back half of his rookie year, what does that do for this defensive line that already includes a player like DeForest Buckner?
I mean, it does a ton. I mean, you guys saw last year in the playoff game, the Colts were able to get some pressure, but they just did not have the athleticism up front to contain Josh Allen. I mean, given most defensive ends don't have that, but Justin Houston, Danico Autry, both very talented veteran guys. The Colts kind of realized after that game, like, we need to go younger. We need to go athletic. Even though those guys, again, are very solid players. So they kind of went to the draft route, and they went super young. They went Kwity Paye. They went Dio Adembo. and they said, okay, we're going to develop these guys and we're just going to see what they get. So, you know, it is a notable step back from what it was last year with this pass rush, but what we've seen these last couple weeks, and I know it's against the Jaguars and the Jets, but you know, when you look at their offensive lines, the Jets and Jaguars, like, they're not great, but they're not like backups. You know, they're not the worst offensive lines in the league. I think the Jets are 12th in pass block win percentage, whatever it is, with ESPN. So, you know, decent offensive lines, and the Colts' young pass rushers are finally starting to step up. You know, they're getting getting Quiddy Pay to kind of be Quiddy Pay, the guy that they drafted him to be. A random breakout has been Taylor Stallworth these last couple weeks at defensive tackle. They've kind of rotated him in on third downs and had him rushing alongside DeForest Buckner. And he already has as many sacks as he had in his entire career in the last two games, along with he has double the quarterback hits that he had in his entire career in the last two games. So the pass rush is finally starting to come around. And I think going into that Jets game 2 weeks ago, the Colts were last in the NFL in quarterback hits and pressure percentage. Now they're slowly starting to get up to, you know, around 20th or so, just because these last 2 weeks have been so good with their pass rush. So I will say, you know, for this Bills offensive line that is a little banged up, having, Spencer Brown not being the lineup, they are kind of catching the Colts at a time where their pass rush is actually decent right now, or like at a point where we can say like, okay, hey, they're actually doing something to the quarterback, because early in the year, that just wasn't the thing. It wasn't the point or what they were doing.
So, Zach, I don't know if you know this about Bruce, but Bruce is a coverage over pass rush guy, and will go to bat with just about anybody on it. You start to talk about the struggles of this Colts defense and where maybe they're starting to come into their own. Where in let's say this defense, this Matt Eberflus defense, sort of sees their ceiling this year with the personnel that it has. Like, are we seeing sort of, with a pass rush, with an increased pass rush and a better performing pass rush, that some of the pressure off the secondary can get relieved a little bit and maybe they can start to see more success in the back end? Or do you believe that there, if the good offenses that exist in the AFC, they're just going to target and they're going to take advantage of those sort of weak spots in that secondary?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I always hear people talk about the Colts poor secondary, which when you look at the passing numbers and what they've allowed in pass defense, yeah, you could absolutely say that. But when you actually watch the film, the cornerbacks have been mostly fine. I mean, Xavier Rhodes is kind of looking like a washed corner. So that's definitely an issue. But Rocky Sin, I think, is Pro Football Focus's 20th overall corner in terms of coverage grade this year. He's had a really good bounce back season. Kenny Moore is one of the best nickel guys in all of football, just an outstanding corner. And then Isaiah Rogers, a 6th-round pick last year, is playing some pretty good ball. So I think these corners are playing well. They're playing at the level where they can compete with good receivers. But the issues really in pass defense come right down the middle. It's the linebackers are just not getting it done in pass coverage, and then the safeties are just so, so injured right now. I mean, like Bruce was saying, Andrew Sandejo has been a starter the last couple weeks. That's basically just because he's been with the team the longest. They're getting a guy out there who's a longtime vet. Josh Jones out there a little bit, but he had a couple bad plays last week. George Odom, who's mostly a special teamer guy. So, you know, these safeties, they're not down to their second or third safety. They're down to their third, fourth, fifth safety. You know, it's really down the depth chart. So having this pass rush finally, you know, start stepping up, start developing, you know, Taylor Stallworth, Quiddy Pay, DeForest Buckner still doing his thing. It really is taking the pressure off of a secondary, or at least the middle of the field, that can't be exploited. Now, there is still ways to beat that this defense in the past, and I think that's definitely the best way to go. But I do think the corners on the outside give a little bit of pressure. They do a good job of competing. And then if the pass rush is, you know, playing good football like they have the last 2 weeks, this defense is pretty tough to beat.
Darius Leonard had one of my absolute favorite injury quotes of all time recently. And it was, when asked about his ankle, Darius Leonard said, "It's attached. That's about it." That's it. That's all you got from Darius Leonard, saying, "Hey, it is still physically located on my body." Like, that's as far as I can go and still give a positive review. I really feel like if Baker Mayfield just would have said about his shoulder injury or his knee injury or his any other myriad of injuries, if he just would have said, "It's attached. That's about it," people would have been like, he just went up a notch in my book. Like, that was a really cool response, you know, but he didn't say that. He didn't do anything. How badly compromised is Darius Leonard?
You know, he's absolutely psychotic. He is when you think of the mentality of a linebacker, he is a psychotic human being, and he will play through anything. When you watch the film this year, he is not the same Darius Leonard with how he moves. You know, before, if you watch the last couple of years, you would say, okay, yeah, you know, maybe one of the 10 best moving linebackers, like one of the most athletic linebackers in the NFL. This year, it's just not there, you know, and he's never been a great coverage backer, but we're seeing this a lot more in coverage this year. So the Colts are disguising it a little bit. You know, they're having him rush the passer a little bit more. They're having him stay around the line of scrimmage a little bit more. But the craziest thing about Darius Leonard is, despite his ankle barely being on and him just not being healthy and not moving the level that he was, he still has, I think he's created 8 turnovers this year. He's forced like 5 fumbles. He's got 3 interceptions or whatever it is. I don't know the official number right now, but like Darius Leonard, despite not being completely healthy, is still a playmaker on the defense. So are you kind of scheming or worried about like a complete linebacker who's going to shut down whoever he's against or make the perfect play every time? No, but with Darius Leonard, even when he's injured, he's going to force turnovers and he's going to be a playmaker. And that's something that opposing offenses and quarterbacks have to be aware of with Darius Leonard.
Zach, I want to go on the offensive side of the ball, and I love the work you did this offseason on Carson Wentz and breaking down his film and trying to find the good in what has been, I think, a really tough last few years of his career. And there's definitely no denying this was sort of his last chance. It felt like, anyways. Now, you know, across the NFL, there are so many teams that are quarterback in need. You never know if it's true, if it would ever truly been his last chance, even if he flamed out. But the guy we saw at the end of training camp, which was just such a difficult situation, it just felt like, man, this feels very Carson Wentz-y, right? It just like everything sort of kept coming back to he can't stay healthy. Then he sprains both of his ankles and he's got the foot surgery. Everything that could go wrong with Carson Wentz this offseason and into training camp did go wrong. However, it looks like he's starting to find his way. And then like every time everyone's like, ooh, Carson Wentz, he throws a left-handed interception for a pick 6. And then, oh, he hasn't thrown an interception in 6.5 quarters. And oh my God, what a terrible play. So there's still, while the volume mistakes maybe have been reduced down, the one or two mistakes he still is making, they do tend to find they end up being big points in the game. But overall, from the 30,000 foot view, based on where you guys stand in the AFC, the turmoil that existed early in this football season, what are your overall thoughts? Midseason grade, where are you on Carson Wentz?
I think the only way you can really grade him, even though the stats look great, I think it's 17 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. For me, I think it's right middle of the line. He's a kind of an average quarterback. And the problem with the way that he's average, you know, he's not just consistently average. He's very, very volatile. It's either going to be, oh, he's going to throw for 300 yards or 400 yards and a couple touchdowns, or we're going to get a 100-yard game and a pick. You know, we're going to get the way that he played against the Titans in both games, or we're going to get the way that he played against the Jaguars this past week where it's a complete dud. Or we're going to have games where, you know, Monday Night Football against the Baltimore Ravens, he comes out and throws for the most career yards and, you know, most yards in his entire career and gives the Colts offense a chance to win that game if they just make a couple kicks. So it sucks having a quarterback who's so volatile and you don't know what he's going to do each week. But I think overall, if you're just looking at the way that he performed last year in 2020, where, you know, he was barely a rosterable quarterback. He was that bad last season. Now you got a guy who's more around league average and he can give you some good high points. I think that's an improvement. So overall, you know, you want to see more. You want to see how he does in the big matchup against the Bills this week. You know, can he perform against a top team? Not just a top team on offense or a top team on defense, but a top overall team all around the board. Can he, you know, throw punches in that matchup? That's really the biggest thing going forward. He's got a couple of those coming up. But, you know, for the most part, he's shown that he's not broken. He's shown that he can be at least league average again. So I think that's a win, at least in my book.
I got to pivot, and I got to ask you about Jonathan Taylor. First off, there is no question here. Jonathan Taylor is the best running back in the league. That's not a question. That's a statement that I'm just making. So I will fight you or anyone else. You're obviously probably not going to fight me on it, but I will fight anyone else in the comment section who would like to say elsewise. So My question is this: with Carson Wentz being okay this year, right? He's been okay. I think we can all agree. Yeah. Carson Wentz has been okay. He's certainly markedly better than he was last year with the Eagles. And knowing that okay quarterbacks can still have success. You can have an okay season from a quarterback and still be successful. Is Jonathan Taylor the kind of player who can be the focal point of a Super Bowl team?
I mean, I always subscribe to the mindset that you need that top quarterback. That's always been me. If you have a top quarterback, you can consistently get there. But we have seen one-off teams where, oh, they have a top 10 defense and they have a legit playmaker like a Jonathan Taylor or like a star receiver. And they can be that focal point to get them, you know, to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, in a sense, yeah. But for me personally, I'm always going to subscribe to the top quarterback. But like you said, Jonathan Taylor, at least, you know, to completely get rid of all of the debate of he's the best healthy running back in the NFL right now. He's playing like he's probably got the, you know, the early edge to be the offensive player of the year with the way he's playing. Just an outstanding player, and he's gotten better and better every single game. And, you know, for Bills fans, if they might not think that he's that great, just go turn on some film. I mean, he's just an outstanding player.
Zach, to finish up and get you out of here, I got to ask you about a very special someone. Particularly, this someone has a bit of a history between Bruce and I, and so I can set the stage and give you the context, Zach. What was the pick in our Dynasty Fantasy League, Bruce, that I traded for you for Michael Pittman last offseason? What was that? Remind, was it a two?
It was a two, yeah.
Was it a three? I thought it was a three.
It was a two. It was a 2023 two.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure, yes. I have the bet.
So it was a second-round pick 2 years in advance. He sold real low on Michael Pittman, and I am bearing the fruits of all of his labor right now. But tell me a little bit about the ascension here, Zach, of Michael Pittman, and a guy that, listen, I sort of keep going back in the same way that I believe the Bills, in an unthinkable way, you know, draft Boogie Basham in the second round this year instead of Creed Humphrey, who's probably going to be an all-pro center as he moves throughout the rest of the season and into the rest of his career, and Boogie Basham's in street clothes. I think the Kansas City Chiefs are probably just kicking themselves for taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Michael Pittman, who has just turned into such a legit. Imagine Pittman in that offense as a bona fide number two receiver. Talk about unstoppable. But, you know, their loss is obviously the Indianapolis Colts gain. Tell me a little bit about what makes him so special and what it took for Carson Wentz, maybe his presence, to really elevate Pittman's game a little.
Yeah, you know, starting kind of with his rookie year, the Colts like to slow play their rookies quite a bit. I mean, receivers in particular, you know, so Michael Pittman Jr., you could see flashes of it in his rookie season. And I even got to the point at the end of the season, like going into last year, I was like, okay, cool. Michael Pittman Jr., long time wide receiver too. He's going to be a solid, solid player for this team. And a lot of last year you could see that, but there were just flashes of like after the catch and things when he had go up in traffic and get something, he would. And it was just like, okay, there might be something here. But even then, even with my most optimistic expectation, I did not expect the year that he's having this season. As someone who was, you know, very high on a lot of players, I just didn't see it with him becoming a bona fide number one receiver who can kind of compete against anyone. And that's kind of what he's grown to. And I think we saw it best in that playoff game against the Bills last year. You know, big game against the Bills. Mm-hmm. You're going against one of the best teams in the league, and he comes out and he has a big performance. And we're just kind of seeing that carry over this year. So, yeah, I mean, I really thought after last year, you know, more of an underneath guy, big body guy, he'd catch everything on third down. But he's kind of become an all-around receiver. You know, he can win vertically. He can win intermediate. He can win short. I think he's got the most receiving yards and catches in the NFL on third down this year. So teams know that they're going to him on third down, but he's still making plays. So, yeah, like when you said ascension of Michael Pittman Jr., I think that's exactly what we're seeing. I think he's on pace for 1,200 yards this year as really the only – like the second leading receiver on the Colts right now is Jonathan Taylor. So Michael Pittman Jr. is the only receiver you really have to be worried about, and he's still beating defenses. So, yeah, I think he's an outstanding young receiver, and I think that he – I mean, he's already surpassed my expectations so far, and he's only going to get better, I think. Just an outstanding player, great mindset, and he catches almost anything thrown his way. So, yeah, I mean, Carson Wentz has kind of unlocked that with his ability to just kind of force it to him. But I think a lot of the credit has to go to Michael Pittman Jr. and just where he is right now in his career.
He reminds me of Alshon Jeffery with juice, just like with like athleticism. It's just, the things that you watch him do at his size, I think is to me the most interesting thing. And I still think, and I've thought this since Pittman came into the league and what I saw of him at USC, is I believe that they haven't fully unlocked his ability out of the slot yet. And I think once once they sort of unlock that and they can find him a true number two, where they can really kind of play with personnel groupings, bump him in into the slot, I think he's the type of guy that could be, you know, top four, top five kind of guy in the NFL. So it'll be interesting to see his growth. And I'll be most interested this weekend, Zach, in the matchup against Tre'Davious White, who right now is probably playing some of the best football of his young career. And, you know, because that Trey White just doesn't have those volume interception numbers, he doesn't really necessarily get the same, you know, hype and the love that a guy like Jalen Ramsey gets. But I mean, nobody throws Trey White's way for a reason. So that matchup, who I think will be motivated, by the way, Trey White, after definitely to your point in that playoff game last year, Michael Pittman really had his way with that Bills defense. But Zach, we appreciate you so much. Thanks for making time for us on your Friday night, brother. I know I'll have you back on with me tomorrow on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR. So I'll be looking forward to doing that with you, man. Tell the folks here that are listening and watching along where they can find your work and what you got coming up.
Yeah. So you guys can, you know, you guys find me on Twitter at Zach Hicks 2. Nice and simple. It's right there in my bio there, or in my little title there. And then also, SI Colts, we call it Horseshoe Huddle, but you know, just look up Sports Illustrated Colts. You can find me on there writing everything Colts, love, hate, you know, everything from Colts fans. You guys know how it is. But yeah, man, excited for this past week or for this next week, and excited to be on your radio show tomorrow, man.
Awesome, bro. We appreciate you, Zach. Enjoy the game this weekend, and enjoy your Thanksgiving with your family, as I'm sure we probably won't. You and I will chat tomorrow, but if I don't see or chat with you before then, enjoy the holiday, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. You too.
We appreciate you. Zach Hicks there of SI.com. He covers the Colts over at SI_Colts on Twitter. That's his, that's the team page. And of course, he mentioned you can follow him at Zach Hicks 2 on Twitter. And that's Zach with an H, by the way, which is an important distinction for those who have, friends, multiple Zach friends with different spellings. Bruce, I have three Zach friends that have three different spellings: Zach, Zack, and the elusive Zak.
Do you have a Zac in your group?
Ooh, I don't.
Well, I think you're missing the fourth horseman of the apocalypse.
I guess so. Yeah, well, I guess that's why we haven't had the apocalypse, because I haven't gotten
you don't have
together.
A ZAC.
Yeah.
You know, Nate, I've heard you make a couple references to the Pittman trade before, and you've had a little bit of laughing at my expense.
Oh,
and so
Bruce.
What I did was I prepared for
did
the
you?
Event that you were going to do this.
Did
and so
you?
what I have decided to put up on the screen right now is an example of Nate Geary's trade that he made to Joe Marino for Miles Gaskin and Tua Tagovailoa.
Scorched earth, huh? Bruce just went scorched earth. I guess that's what this is.
He decided to trade four first round picks to Joe Marino for Miles Gaskin and Tua Tagovailoa. It will go down in history as being potentially the worst possible trade I have ever seen. So I told Nate, I told him a long time ago, I said, listen, you keep giving me crap about this trade when it really wasn't that bad. I got a high second round pick out of it. So for me, it's not that bad, all things considered. It could have been a little bit better, I'm not going to lie. Joe Marino in the comments section, making sure that he's here to vouch for what happened. He can confirm that it did go down. But I just want to make sure I throw that up there, just so everybody knows that. Listen, Nate, I don't know what to tell you, man. I told you. You keep making fun of me. Eventually, I'm going to bite back. Nate, he turns off his camera. He's like, screw it, I'm done. I'm done with you. I'm absolutely done with you. You're done. I love it.
And why? And what did you text Joe Marino to make sure that he was in here for this? Like, did
no?
You...
I saw him in here earlier, and while you were talking to him, I quick uploaded the image onto the StreamYard so I could drop it in here when I saw that he was in here before.
You son of a bitch!
Come on, man, that was brilliant. The absolutely. Brilliant. Joe says the silver lining is that Nate in his heart cannot stand Tua. It's
no,
true.
I can't.
He went against his better judgment and traded for Tua. Mind you, Here's what Nate doesn't tell you. He also traded Joe Burrow to me.
I got
now
Nick
I have
Chubb
Joe Burrow, and he's looking for a quarterback.
I got
so,
Nick
you know
Chubb
what?
Out of it.
You did get Nick Chubb out of it. Would you rather have and Joe Burrow?
I got Nick Chubb and a first out of it.
You did get Nick Chubb and a first. Yes, you did. But I got Joe Burrow. So
you did this when I got friggin' nasty ass eggnog in my stomach. I got milk punch in my stomach, and that's what you pull.
I wasn't planning on doing this until
yes,
you brought
you
up
were.
The Pittman trade again.
You knew we had a Colts guy on, so you knew that I was gonna bring up Pittman.
You didn't have to. You chose. You brought this on yourself, Nate. You brought it on yourself. But we have an email. That is not me emailing myself the image of that trade. It is actually a food for thought related question. And I love this question. I saw it. I was like, Nate's going to be so excited. So I got this email from Squeedersaurus is the name of this guy. And
love
he
that.
Said, good day, Bruce. My name is Lester. And I'm a huge fan of both of your shows. I have a somewhat hot food take for you. Not a take on hot food. A hot take about food. I believe that spoons are a better mechanism for eating mac and cheese than forks.
Well,
a majority of the time, I see people picking up macaroni with a fork rather than using the prongs to stab the noodles. Why not have more surface area to pick up the noodles? This is especially true with regular Kraft mac and cheese since they're too small and slippery to stab. Even if you do stab it, you don't get as many noodles per scoop. I just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on the subject. Thank you so much, Go Bills. Nate, I loved this take.
Yeah,
this is the type of take that Food for Thought was created for.
Right.
We want to talk about football. That's cool, too. But really, let's be honest. We're here about food, right? We're here about food. We're here to talk about food. And we're here to mix that conversation in with football. I got to hear, what do you think about mac and cheese with a spoon versus mac and cheese with a fork?
So I guess really what this comes down to is this a roux-based or are we just going straight into a slow cooker? Because the al dente, the level of firmness to the noodle, I think matters here. If you go with like a real, I also think the size of the noodle, Matt, penne, like, you know, Fat Bob's. Have you been to Fat Bob's before, right?
I have.
Okay. So, and I assume you've gotten their mac and cheese.
Of course.
It's very good mac and cheese. It's definitely not the best mac and cheese, but it's good mac and cheese. But they make it with, like, you know, full-size penne noodles. You can't go spoon with those. Mm-mm. You can't.
I like to hook the penne in the actual fork itself.
In the fork prong. So you get four
go
full.
Go sideways. Well, so you're actually three full-size breaking the noodle pieces. At all. You're actually sliding the prong of the fork inside the penne noodle and lifting it out.
So listen, folks, here's the best way to find out if you're out at an Italian restaurant. Just look around, and if someone is eating their penne by sticking their fork into the small penne holes, you know you have finally found Bruce Nolan in the wild.
Daggone it, Nate.
Now everyone's going to be so self-conscious. They're going to be looking at the penne noodles. Who here got penne? Penne's on the menu. Excuse me. You go to the main waitress or the busboy. Like, hey, listen, here's a $20 bill. You see anybody here tonight while I'm here eating penne like a serial killer? Let me know. Let me know, please.
Zach says the FBI is taking notes. Thanks a lot, Nate. Just out here giving the FBI stuff. No, I think this is a wonderful take. I absolutely think it's a great take. I think that one of the things that is interesting to me when it comes to fork and spoon is what kind of ratio of noodle to cheese sauce do you want to get? And I think if you get something that is a little bit runnier, then you might want to actually drain the noodle a little bit before you don't want noodle soup. You want there to be something left in the bottom because go ahead.
I was going to say roux-based mac and cheese is like you get the little flour, you get the little cornstarch, so you get that like thickness. Like, yeah. I'm totally with you. There's nothing. That's why Kraft is like, go get the Annie's, you know, organic, or go get like Velveeta. And I know we're talking degrees of fake cheese, but I think the Velveeta cream cheese, or like that, whatever you'd want to call that version of cheese over the powdered cheese, because the powdered cheese just does not get thick enough. And I know there's probably cornstarch in there, but like, I am all about Velveeta over easy mac. And I hope that's not a crazy take here, but
That's not a crazy take at all. And I'm a Stouffer's guy. So,
Okay.
I make no apologies for my Stouffer's fandom when it comes to mac and cheese.
You shouldn't. I think Easy Mac is super overrated. Like when I was in college and all I could afford was the 79-cent Easy Macs, of course, like grab those or the pre-bowl ones where all you had to do is put a little water in, throw it in the microwave, serve it. Like I get that. We were all in our poor stage where, you know, girls wouldn't talk to us. I get it. But like we've all evolved.
I don't know anything about the stage where girls wouldn't talk to you. I don't know. Sorry, can't help you, Nate. he turns off the camera again. He's gone. He's like, I'm done with you again. Okay,
I'm done with
so
the show.
Moving along, we went through the mailbag. We had the conversation. If there are questions in the comments, now's the time. If you have hot takes, now's the time. I will be scrolling through it. Cam, thank you so much for saying this is the content that I'm here for. Amanda has a hot take. She says, biggest hot take, stuffing should be your year-round dish. Fourth mm-hmm. of July, birthdays, everything. Okay, now, this is
important.
There should
be seasonal stuffings. Like
I don't like
different
stuffing.
Ingredients based on the season. You know, fall, you get a little right. bit like, you sure. know, cranberry, some dried yeah. cranberry. Maybe summertime, you get some dried apricot in there.
So this is important. The reason why I don't like stuffing is because I don't like a lot of the herb choices that people use for stuffing. I'm not a thyme guy. I'm not a rosemary guy. So there, I can imagine different seasonal stuffings that I would be okay with. I can envision a stuffing that I would be completely fine with. So when it comes to holiday meal or dish you guys believe should be year round, Amanda, this is my take. Anything you want to eat should be a year round dish.
That's right.
Anything. If you want chili on August 4th at 7 a.m., you should eat chili at August 4th on 7 a.m.
If you want eggnog in June in Miami, Florida, your nickname should be Hannibal Lecter, you sick, sick, sick human.
You should be incarcerated at that point. That's what you should be. I can just imagine a bearded Will Ferrell going, eggnog was a bad choice. Eggnog was a bad choice. T. Dobbs says, after watching Mac Jones last night, I realized he was a machine. His passes are textbook choices a machine would select. A disciplined DB group can step between the receiver and go the other way. I am fine with Mac Jones. I'm fine with Mac Jones. I don't understand the national slobbering over Mac Jones at this point. I think Mac Jones has been completely reasonable. Last time I did the QB stew for Mac Jones, he was 16th at the time. So he's fine. He's being conservative and he's being reasonable, but the only pass he threw over 20 yards last night got picked. So I think he's in a good system. And mm-hmm. he is following the rules of the system as well as any quarterback has it in recent memory in that system that wasn't named Tom Brady. He followed it better than Hoyer. He followed it better than Jared Stidham. He followed it better than Cam Newton. But so far, that's all we've seen that he is. So what you are seeing is a human manifestation of Josh McDaniels' system. Mm-hmm. But you're not seeing a quarterback who's rising above it. You're not seeing a quarterback who's rising above the X's and O's. You're seeing a quarterback who's living inside the X's and O's, which is fine. There's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that as a rookie right. quarterback. There's nothing. I am not bashing Mac Jones. I'm saying if this is the only thing we get from Mac Jones ever, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
But there's a reasonable chance this isn't all you got from Mac Jones. But the thing is, I'm surprised that when you read the scouting report on Mac Jones,
all
this
of
is
these
what
things.
We were going to get. Did yeah. anybody think that Mac Jones was not going to have a higher floor than the other quarterbacks? The reason why Mac Jones was taken last of that group of quarterbacks was not because they thought he would be worse as a rookie. It's because they thought he had the lowest ceiling. That's the reason yep. why. And that's proven to be true. So why are we now all sitting around wondering and acting like somehow this wasn't expected? I just don't get it. Nate, am I taking crazy pills?
No, you're not. And listen, I think this is exactly what you were going to expect to see in the system. And I think people are asking the right questions, right? Like, would Mac Jones be this in any other system right now, anywhere, right? Is Mac Jones Mac Jones if he's in Atlanta? Is Mac Jones the guy we're seeing every week if he's in Miami or if he's in another one of these systems? And I think the answer is no. And I think he's in a system that understands what his skill set is and uses it. You know, I think there's a good chance that in some of the worst starts we saw from Justin Fields, there's a good chance that his coaches don't understand his skill set and what his strengths and weaknesses are. And they don't lean in the same way that Josh McDaniels leans into Mac Jones. But I'll say this. I don't believe that this is going to be the Mac Jones we see 3, 4, 5 years from now. I do think he sort of has the – he probably has the ceiling of, like, what I think everyone thought Kirk Cousins was going to be, which is just a more consistent guy. But he's going to have to exist in that system, which is they're going to have a successful running game. If they don't, I think the way to beat Mac Jones, especially right now, early in his career, line your guys up 5 yards across the line of scrimmage, play man, physical press coverage, and force him to make tight window throws to throw guys open. I also think you need to get pressure in the middle on Mac Jones. If Mac Jones has to move to the right or to the left, particularly to his left, turn his hips around, get his shoulders around, and get the ball down the field, he's going to really struggle when teams force him to use his arm. I still think that he is benefiting from not having a ton of film on him yet. That's going to come around. And I think if you're the Bills, I think if you're some of these teams that like to run a lot of pressure looks, and the Bills have been a more pressure and a more man-oriented team than maybe they ever have before. And I don't think there's any, I don't think there's any coincidence that they're playing some of the best football that they've ever played, particularly from a pass defense. They're running more man. They're letting Trey White shadow team's number one wide receivers. We're seeing elevated play from Levi Wallace. We're seeing all pro level play from the two safeties. They're able to disguise pre-snap. Mac Jones has not faced the defense pre-snap like the Buffalo Bills. So I think for me, I am going way cold on these Patriots because I just think that everyone's just going way too hard on the team that, you know, listen, they're winning football games the way that I think Bill Belichick wanted to, which is they're going to play good defense. Matthew Judon, they're getting a really high return on investment for him in free agency. I thought he's been really good for them, a revelation on the defensive side of the ball. They're in, I think Christian Barmore has been, he's been really, really good. You talk about some of the things that they're getting out of Kyle Van Noy, who, you know, the Dolphins decided to give away after signing to a big contract. So, like, listen, Bill Belichick's going to do his things. He's going to get the ceiling out of a lot of guys. But I think right now, I'll be interested to see the same questions that exist about Lamar Jackson, which is, can you play from behind? Lamar has answered those questions, but it took him 4 years. I think it's going to take a little while to prove that Mac Jones can play from behind, can play when teams know he's going to throw it, and when play action isn't as, you know, isn't as useful for him. But it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the season plays out. They're not going to win out. I still like the Bills to win both matchups against the Patriots, but we'll see. That they're not going to be easy games, that's for sure.
JR says, what I was going to say, and I probably should have been saying multiple times here. JR, please hit the like button, everyone, by the way. Yes, like, rate, review, subscribe, all the engagement stuff. We love it. Thank you so much. I got an email the other day from a listener, and it was just awesome. Some of the fans of this show are some of the best people in Bill's mind.
Indeed.
And indeed, I've gotten some unbelievable takes and unbelievable emails from people who are just like, I just have so much fun. I kick off my shoes at the end of a long week and I watch some Food for Thought, and it's just a good time. So thank you for that. So we're going to close it up with winners and losers from this week in the NFL. Nate, I want to go with loser first because I want to end on a positive note, because I got berated for Pittman. You got berated for the Tua trade. So I want to make sure we end up on a positive note.
Sure.
So because of it, we're going to start with losers. Who is your loser in the NFL this week?
It's tough for me, but I've got to say it's Aaron Rodgers. And I just think Aaron Rodgers continues to look worse and worse just from a human perspective. And this year did some damage for the overall persona of Aaron Rodgers, particularly for a guy like me who there are certain quarterbacks that I've always really liked and I've always leaned into and have adored from an on-field perspective, but also just the everything about Aaron Rodgers had always really clicked for me. And you know, I'm not with it anymore. So Aaron Rodgers, I think he's probably also been a loser on this show a few other times this year, but another week, I think, where I wish he would just, you know what? This is what I wish Aaron Rodgers would do sometimes, Bruce.
For those of you listening in podcast form, again, he shut off his camera. He just went completely
three gone. Times today. Yeah, three times.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's a good move. It's a good move. I'm not going to lie. So for me, the biggest loser this week is Pete Carroll. We all knew that Pete Carroll had been propped up by a healthy and dynamic Russell Wilson for a long time. Now that he doesn't have a healthy and dynamic Russell Wilson, all of a sudden, it's not quite the same. And Russell Wilson ends up getting blanked against the Packers. But again, you know, he's coming back from a broken finger on the throwing hand. So it's one of those scenarios where I have never been. Anyone who's listened to the Bruce Exclusive knows I am not a Pete Carroll apologist. I don't think he's that good of a coach. I think he's a very middling NFL head coach who has been propped up by a really, really, really good quarterback. And so for me, the fact that this is finally getting exposed, to Pete Carroll's credit, he knows.
He flat out said
multiple times, I would have gotten fired a long time ago if it wasn't for Russell Wilson. So congratulations on the self-awareness,
yep,
Pete. But if Russell Wilson isn't with the Seahawks next year, if he does,
which he's not going to be,
then why on earth are you going to keep Pete Carroll? Why not?
Why don't you keep Pete Carroll? I don't think you can.
You know what? It's a clean break. You got rid of the quarterback, get rid of the coach, just move on, right? So for me, if Pete Carroll could have shown that there's a possibility of success post-Wilson, if Pete Carroll would have done what Belichick did last year, Belichick went 7-9 with a horrible roster. A horrible roster. The 2020 Patriots roster was bad. Real bad. He went 7-9 and was competitive throughout. That was when the question of, was it Belichick or Brady, which is a stupid question to begin with because it's never one or the other. It's always both. The question is to what degree. But when it was done, everyone was like, okay, you can win with Belichick and without Brady. I don't know if you're going to win Super Bowl, but you can win games with Belichick without Brady because that team was not good.
Mm-mm.
Then all of a sudden, the Seahawks got a taste of Carroll without Wilson. And they're like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, this isn't going to work.
So my biggest loser, Pete Carroll.
I can't wait to tell you my biggest winner.
Biggest winner.
Biggest winner in the NFL last week, Adele. And let me tell you why, Adele. Ready. Because Adele saved us from having to watch that. Was it Sunday Night Football? Yeah, it was Sunday Night Football. I can't even tell you who played on Sunday Night Football because I was watching Adele. Biggest winner.
Wow.
She was amazing. She was amazing. Adele is amazing.
She's fantastic.
She might be one of the greatest current living, you know, singers, male, female, doesn't matter. She is unbelievable. Adele's my biggest winner.
Are you ready for a take while we're on the subject?
Yeah, absolutely.
The most talented and gifted vocalist on the planet right now is Tori Kelly. Yeah, I went there. I went there.
I don't even know who that is.
You don't know who that is?
No.
All right. Google it when I'm done. I'm ashamed. I don't know what to tell you.
Never even. Is it a male, female?
That's a female. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What was the name?
Tori Kelly. T-O-R-I Kelly. Yes. She's fantastic. She's the best vocalist on the planet right now. That's my strong take. Better than all of the people you talk about. Better than Adele, better than Carrie Underwood, better whoever you think the best vocalist on the planet is right now, I think Tori Kelly's better. That's my hot take. My biggest winner this week in the NFL was Jonathan Taylor. And I'll tell you why it was Jonathan
Taylor. He stays winning.
Jonathan Taylor continues to win. But more importantly, Jonathan Taylor has made you forget that there was a Derrick Henry a couple weeks ago.
That's right.
And I think that that's really impressive for someone who leaves a legacy like that. Jonathan Taylor is starting to get those Adrian Peterson comparisons.
He's
starting to get that galloping big play at any given moment. You can break a big one sort of stuff. And when you have that, aura, which he was a good player, and everyone expected this year he was going to break out. He came out a little bit slow at the very beginning of the year, and there was some question as to why he wasn't getting more carries. But Nyheim Hines, who got a bajillion catches last year for Phillip Rivers, and because of Phillip Rivers' presence, I actually feel like they ended up putting in Nyheim Hines more often than they probably should have. And it kind of put a little bit of a damper on Jonathan Taylor. He got off to a little slow start last year too. But for me, Jonathan Taylor is becoming the dude in the NFL. When people think about running backs who can take over a game, running backs who can break a 70-yard touchdown, they're thinking about Jonathan Taylor. And because he's starting to get the capacity to match the talent, he's always had the talent. Nick Chubb has the talent too, but as long as he's splitting carries with Kareem Hunt,
It'll never be realized at the same level.
It'll never be the same thing. Jonathan Taylor is getting the capacity now to match the talent. Marcel Louis-Jacques and I were having a discussion about a Jonathan Taylor trade, and he was willing to trade me a lot of things for Jonathan Taylor. And I was probably balking at most of them because Jonathan Taylor is a 22-year-old star in the NFL who, as long as he stays healthy, is starting to get those Adrian Peterson comparisons. You're looking at potentially a Hall of Fame caliber player. And that's in his second year, I'm saying that, because that's the kind of stuff. Think about the situation he's put in with the the Indianapolis offensive line and Frank Reich, who's going to give him the ball. This is a big winner this week. And we are winners, Nate.
We are.
You and I are winners because we had people show up for our show.
We
and
are
engage
winners.
In the comments and make sure that they were giving us hot stuffing takes and all that stuff. Before you come back next week, Nate, listen to some Tori Kelly. Tell them what you think.
All right,
about
sure. I'll do homework for you.
Do homework. Yeah, some homework. Right. For those of you in the comment sections and those of you listening around the world, thanks for stopping by to Food for Thought. And we hope you didn't leave hungry.